What's up, Evolver Planet? Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Jonah Bolt, and joining us, as always, is co-host Aaron Shaw.
Hey, thanks for tuning in, Evolver Planet. Today's Friday, April 6th, 2012.
And on the show tonight, we have our first interview with an amazing guest. We have Stephen Mailer coming on the show, Crystal Skull Researcher, Egyptologist, and Rostrocrucian Research Scientist.
And we'll hear musical artist Hope Griffin, folk songwriter and vocalist from Black Mountain, North Carolina.
And first we'll jump into some Evolver updates. Any Evolver updates on your end, Aaron?
There's a couple big ones. First, the Evolver social movement went nonprofit recently. This was a long time in the making. And that means that your monthly or one-time contributions to the Evolver social movement are tax-deductible. So, I mean, they really, like, you know, they hurdled all the bureaucracies to get this going, and it was a huge effort. And, yeah, the transformation gets a little more legit every day.
Awesome.
And the other one, yeah, it really is awesome. And then another Evolver update is actually this Sunday starts the next Evolver Intensive. It's called Visionary Nutrition, Enhancing Your Health in a Psychedelic World. And it's a sort of interactive online course with David Wolf, Daniel Vitalis, Peter Gorman, and Morgan Brent. So it's really interesting. You can learn all about, like, how what you ingest kind of affects your consciousness. And, you know, it's sort of like taking a plant's eye view of psychedelic nutrition. Very cool.
Wow, that's awesome. And it's funny, talking about David Wolf, my roommate here is working on an Orbis vortex generator for water, which basically produces white powder gold. And David Wolf has a website and also does that as a trap water system that produces, like, the ancient gold from the ancients of Egypt. So he's got these huge pyramids and stuff downstairs, so I'm sure he'll tune into that. I also saw an awesome article up on Evolver. .net, which was Jesus was a Buddhist, an Easter resurrection, and that was posted up by Robert Kopecky today. And basically, the article talked about the real origins of Christianity and principles and how it's transmitted into spiritual teachings. And saw an awesome quote on there, which was, "Where you find truth, love, and compassion, you'll find spiritual healing and evolution." And that really stuck in my mind. So that's a cool article for everyone to check out on the that was on evolver.net.
Yeah.
Cool. Anything else up going on out in LA with Evolver?
Oh, LA Evolver's on hiatus for a little bit. We actually just screened, Electronic Awakening premiered here. That went really well, although we weren't sponsoring it. We're gearing up for fall.
Cool. Yeah, we had a great turnout at the Starwolf Shamanic Breathwork thing we did at Firestorm Cafe. We had over 70 people come. And we had amazing experiences. People broke into tears. People had profound experiences from Star Wolf leading everybody in some shamanic breath work. And I know she's going to be leading some intensives coming up. She's also going to be available in New York to meet with Jonathan and do some shamanic breath work with the guys out there. And I think she's also coming out to you guys as well to do some breath work or do a workshop with you guys when she's out there. So that's some really cool stuff. You can check out shamanicbreathwork.org for some more information on that. All right, and with us, I just got news that Stephen Miller is joining us. And just a quick background, Stephen Miller basically involved with Crystal Skull Research since 1979, and as an archaeologist and prehistorian, specialized in the area of ancient cultural artifacts. And he's going to talk to us a little bit about the WESAC conference going on in 2012 from May 4th to the 6th. And you can check out WESAC.us, that's WESAK.us. And that's basically a celebration of the Buddha full moon as per the Alice Bailey Theosophical Literature, and that festival is held on Mount Shasta. And Stephen, thank you so much for coming on the show. How are you?
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you tonight.
Excellent. So jump into telling everybody about the WESAC conference. You've been involved in it. You've been out there before. It's been going on for a while. And give us a breakdown of what's going to be going on this year and why it's so important.
Well, sure. This is actually the 18th time they're doing it up in Mount Shasta, and I used to live in Northern California for 22 years, and particularly in a town called Paradise, which was only about 2 hours away from Mount Shasta, so I spent a lot of time up there. So I'm always grateful to be invited to any kind of conference or gathering up there. It's a tremendous energy zone, as people know, and this is very important because of the year 2012, and particularly there's a lot of great people going to be gathering, speaking in many different fields, but in particular in my area of research, there's going to be two people at this conference. One is Carolyn Ford with the ancient crystal skull Einstein that we can talk about, and another is a gentleman named Raymond Tarpey, who's a historian for ARE, for the Edgar Casey Foundation, and specializes in the Mayan culture. And so there's a lot of interesting energies happening this year, a lot of festivals going on, many different occasions. And these crystal skulls seem to be involved in what a lot of people believe in, different prophecies that come forward at this time period, has to do with the Mayan calendar and things like that.
Excellent. And there's going to be a lot of lectures and speakers. What type of stuff can people expect at the WESAC conference?
Well, there's a lot of people whose names I've known from reputation, but have never met. But again, I will be lecturing on the ancient crystal skulls. As I say, it's to me, it's just for people to come for Einstein, because Einstein was first revealed to his keeper, Carolyn Ford, has had Einstein for over 20 years, but kept it private, never showing it publicly or bringing it out, except to one of the great crystal skull researchers named Nick Nocerino, who was a teacher of mine. And at a conference that we had in New York City in 10-10-10, Einstein was revealed to the public for the first time, and I got to meet Einstein and Carolyn. And since then, I've been able to test Einstein myself, and that takes some time to be alone with the skull. And how I work with these things is I use the way I'm trained from both sides of the brain as an archaeologist, as a scientist, to look at it as an artifact, to examine it physically, but also as a metaphysical scientist, having been involved with the Rosicrucian Order and many different metaphysical systems for over 40 years. I go into experience with the skulls, because what we have with the crystal skulls, and a lot of people have seen many of them, and many of them are out there, and more are coming all the time, and I expect this year more will be revealed. This year has actually been called the Year of Revealing, instead of Doom and Gloom, which a lot of people have bought into, a lot of the Hollywood-type-esque thing. I've been able to work with a lot of great Mayan elders in the last couple of years at these conferences, and there is one in the Mount Shasta area who I hope may just show up for this festival. I don't know, not have been in contact, but that would be great if he did. And the crystal skulls were very much a part of the Mayan culture, and their idea now is that we're coming to the end of a cycle, but going to the beginning of a higher state of consciousness, and the crystal skulls are part of that. They've been used by many different cultures. My research has shown not just the in Mexico and Central America, where most of the skulls have appeared, but there's now stories in South America. There's definitely an interest in Tibet in crystal skulls. I hear rumors of ancient Egypt. I've never heard of anything through my studies of ancient Egypt. I've not seen this tradition. It was not crystal skull carving that I know of in ancient Egypt, but anything is possible. So we're seeing a lot of these skulls show up now. We expect more to be coming all the time as they take part in the aspect of raising human consciousness.
And part of raising human consciousness and what these skulls do is they're basically like computers. They store data and information. Can you go into that and explain how that works? And
well, certainly it's to understand the effect of quartz, of crystal itself, and many people take for granted without realizing that basically the 20th century and now the 21st century are based on the idea of crystalline, particularly silicon quartz chips, which started out as radios and then started out in our eventually led up to our computers now. What quartz, the properties of quartz have many, many different physical properties, but one is to make a incoherent electrical charge coherent, and it quartz crystal in particular works very well with electricity and vibrations in particular. Ancient peoples obviously knew that, and they understood that crystal could be used in many ways to work, interact with human consciousness, to work with energy, and with storing information. And the how this idea came down that has been popularized by myself, but really has to be credited to one of the great pioneers in this work, and it's Dr. Marcel J. Vogel, who I met when I was involved with the Rosicrucian Order, but also has been known and was a senior scientist for IBM, and his PhD was in chemistry and worked with liquid phosphors and crystals, one of the experts in crystals, but also got involved in crystal skull research. And he came up with a theory how quartz crystal actually stores information. Because one of the things that came down to us through working with these skulls is that particularly the ancient crystal skulls, now we do this is we use the work again of another great researcher, Nick Nocerino, who divided the field into understanding three levels. What we would call a modern crystal skull or a contemporary crystal skull is one that's been carved in the last 50 to 100 years. And in particularly in the last 10 years to 20 years, there's been thousands and thousands of skulls, particularly carved in China. It used to be coming out mostly in Brazil and areas like that in Mexico, but now the industry has gotten so big that the Chinese have taken it over and are doing most of the carving crystal skulls today and doing a good job as far as contemporary skulls. Now, what we would call an old skull is one that is more than 100 years old, but a couple of hundred years old. Now, the ones that, of course, that have interested me the most in my work are what we call the ancient crystal skulls. And that's a piece of crystal that's been carved into the shape of a human skull over 1,000 years ago. Now, within that level of understanding and the research I've done, to say over 1,000 years ago, well, you could have one that was carved 1,001 years ago. We call it an ancient crystal skull. Some that I've seen, like the one that's going to be at the WISAC Festival, like Einstein, are well over thousands of years old, maybe more than 5,000, maybe more than 10,000. That's going into the realm where some people can't believe that could be done. But at least 5,000 years, and that's one we call Max, Shanara, and many of the crystal skulls I've seen. And so there's many different levels of these skulls, many different civilizations, many different cultures were involved with them, and they've been passed down through different centuries and cultures, and that's why the legends around them are so much as part of what the lore of them are. But the physical effects, as Marcel Vogel told us. Now, quartz, chemically, is silicon dioxide. That's a silicon atom bonded to two oxygen atoms. Usually appears in a crystalline lattice as a hexagonal shape. That's why most people see pieces of quartz crystal forming naturally as a six-sided shape. Now, within the lattice of quartz, now this first half of what I'm going to give you is pure science, pure crystallography. People can Google it online, they can get textbooks about it, et cetera, et cetera. I'll show you where it breaks, where Marcel Vogel takes it into the metaphysical. But in the field, in the lattice of a crystal, there can be defects. There are two different types called line defects and point defects. For the sake of our argument, we're only going to talk about point defects. Now, what that means is in the crystal lattice, the silicon atom can sometimes be missing within the crystal. It's actually not there. Empty space, bonded to two oxygen atoms. This, again, is not off the wall. This is crystallography. Now, where it goes, where Marcel Vogel then takes it, he says, that empty space. Now, in a small piece of quartz crystal, you could literally have into put into computer talk more than nanobytes, more than gigabytes, more than whatever, terabytes, whatever we've come up with now of empty spaces where you could store, where the energy's there. So that Marcel Vogel says then that space could be occupied by energy, because it is energy. What the atom is, silicon, is just basically energy. So energy could occupy that space, and that energy could be pulsed human thought, that we actually could put our impressions or incidents or events could be stored in the crystal. So that if you take a small piece of crystal, like I said, and then you magnify it to a crystal skull, it becomes almost unexpressible amount of data that can be stored in there, according to this theory. And that is by how the shamans work with these skulls. Actually, I claim that the ancient crystal skulls, and particularly any piece of quartz crystal, will record the vibration of every person and every event that it's around. Now, the crystal skulls were used that way. That's why we say they were the ancient computers. And that's how we can access that information. Again, techniques were taught by both Dr. Vogel and Mr. Nocerino, how to access the energy in the crystal, the information. It's not very difficult. Many, many trained, what we call psychics. When I worked in the Rosicrucian Order, we actually didn't like to use that word, psychic. That means that somebody is more, you know, gifted, that you have that ability, I don't. Now, we use the word sensitive. That's a word we all can relate to, because people have all degrees of sensitivity. So people, of course, who have worked since childhood with these abilities, like Mr. Nocerino did, who was the greatest, one of the greatest so-called sensitives I've ever been around, they train these abilities, and they work with these abilities professionally, and they easily can access the energy and impressions with crystal skulls. I've worked, again, with many, many different crystal skulls, with many, many different people, and people who, you know, can just go into the skull, as I think you said you've experienced too, you just suddenly can see scenes. And what we worked with these ancient skulls, you start seeing scenes of Mayan scenes, Olmec scenes, ancient Egyptian scenes, things that from ancient cultures that are stored in the crystal, and events, and people, and vibrations.
Hi, Stephen. I am, most of this is totally new to me, and I'm really fascinated to learn that there's such a thing as a crystal skull industry and a classification system. I'm really curious, what is it about the shape of the skull? Why are these not crystal hearts or crystal abstract shapes storing data?
Yeah, so that's usually question 101. I mean, that's question 1A. I mean, that's one of the first.
Right.
Why a skull? Of course. Now, you know that the idea of what we call scrying is what we're talking about in a lot of this. Scrying is an ancient term. You can't even find it in the dictionary anymore. You can't Google it. Actually, what we call it is crystal gazing. Now, we know the idea of the crystal ball. It's just a ball shape, a round ball. The idea of the gypsy reading into the crystal. You know, it can be any shape. Why a skull has to do with the cultures that are involved in what we're talking about. Now, to us, in the Judeo-Christian-Islamic understanding of things, we think of a skull as death, as finality, as the end. That's not the case in these indigenous cultures who work with these skulls, particularly the Tibetan cultures, particularly the Olmec, Aztec, and Mayan cultures. And exactly a Mayan glyph of a skull without the lower jaw represents zero, but it represented to the Maya alchemical zero or infinity. So they did not see a skull as a symbol of death, but as a symbol of eternity, infinity. Now, also, the other answer is exactly according to the theory we discussed. We usually think of memory existing in the brain. Now, those of us that have been involved in the field of metaphysics or different type of understanding for many, many years know that we have cellular memory, too, that memory exists in all the cells of our body. But particularly, there was one central organ that stores memory, and that is the brain. Where is the brain housed? In the skull. Very simple.
Okay. I wonder also, having studied Egyptology and ancient civilizations and even getting into astrology, this question is kind of out of left field, but I've always wondered, how does that affect your own understanding of the passage of time and your place in the universe? How does it change your approach to, you know, your present being?
Well, that question, I mean, comes to me from many different levels. I mean, if you're just talking from my experience with crystal skulls or my experience with working with an indigenous wisdom keeper in Egypt who taught that basically what my teachings are as far as what we call chematology, not Egyptology, which is a whole different discipline which I evolved with my teacher, is that all we are, all that there is a never-ending series of cycles. No beginning, no end. In this philosophy, there was no Big Bang. Big Bang is just an idea that physicists like to do to create a patriarchal interpretation of the beginning of Genesis in a physical sense. But according to this teaching, which was very matriarchal, coming from ancient Africa, there was no beginning, there is no end, just interminable cycles in between. And the crystal skulls magnified that understanding for me, because that is exactly what the Mayans believed too, and the ancient Olmecs. In other words, this 2012 again is no end. It's the end of a cycle, but cycles are never ending. We go into a new cycle. That is exactly what my teacher taught me, what the ancient Comitians people believed in Africa. So that we are just different cycles going in. So we're going now to a major shift. A lot of people want to believe that's why many of us chose to be here now, if that's an understanding some people like to have. But whatever it is, this is an incredible event. May you be born in interesting times, the ancient Chinese proverb, we certainly are. Because this 2012 is coming to me from many different cultures, many different researchers for many different years, that so many different cycles are converging now. This is why we have global climate change. It is not a question of either or. Are humans involved in it, or is it natural cycle? It is both. We have magnified, exacerbated what the events that are happening, but this is what my teacher told me would happen 15 years ago, when he said would happen this date, that he knew he would not physically be here to see. But he predicted to be what was going to be happening now, as we're seeing. No, it's not a great revelation now to realize we're having the mother of earthquakes, the mother of volcanoes, the mother of tsunamis, and the mother of climate changes, which is what is happening at the end of a shift, the end of a cycle. But it is not the end of the world. It's not the end of humanity. But the idea now is to have a different understanding. The crystal skulls take a major part in this. That's why they're gathering now. That's why they gather at these groups. They want to there to the crystal itself just helps to increase your vibrational state, increase your own understanding of self-awareness, which is a great self-growth for everyone that gets involved with them, whether they believe in what we talk about them or not. Everyone has an experience with them, particularly the genuine ancient ones. Everyone has an experience with them, whether they want to admit it or not, whether it happens immediately or later in a dream, in a vision, or whatever. But the ancient skulls were programmed that way to interact with human consciousness. I've seen people around the ancient crystal skulls, husbands who were dragged by wives who were very much into it, the husbands not into it at all, didn't want to be there, didn't want to experience this, and came away as total believers to the cause, so to speak.
Wow, and talking about we said earlier when I was with Poncho, the ancient crystal skull, with Mario, and I was lucky enough to be on a couple dozen ceremonies over a month or so, and every single person that came around that skull actually felt something. And the day Poncho disappeared, Mario took him down to Wall Street, and they took him out and meditated on the sidewalk of Wall Street, and a week later, Occupy Wall Street started. I don't know if you knew that.
No, but, I didn't know that. Thank you for sharing that story. What I could tell you about Poncho is, from my limited experience with it, Poncho immediately gave me one of the cultures that were involved in the Aztec Confederation called the Zapotecs. And the interesting thing is, Mario himself has Zapotec lineage, so that's not by accident that skull came to him. But the Zapotec, that particular skull is a hollowed-out skull. So they were created as great ceremonial skulls. There's many of them that I could talk about, and I would be talking about it in my presentation at the Wesak Festival. The ones that are hollowed out, particularly to cover objects or to have light sources underneath them for great ritual. As soon as I met Poncho screamed to me, ritual, ritual, ritual. Love to be in ceremony, love to be ritual. So it's a genuine Zapotec skull, which means it's at least over 1,000 years old. And the Zapotecs were part of the artisans that were conquered by the Aztecs. The Aztecs were actually a confederation of different tribes. So were the Inca in a lot of ways. So the Aztec, two tribes of the Aztec Confederation, the Mixtecs and the Zapotecs, were great artisans, great carvers in jade and in crystal. And so that skull, and I believe I actually traced it. Skull, Poncho even told me where it was from, Monte Alban. And again, that's not by accident, because a lot of Mario's lineage goes back to that area of Mexico, where the Mayan city of Monte Alban was, which was once a Zapotec area too. And that's where I believe... So I gave you a lot of information there from Poncho.
Absolutely.
Yeah, these skulls talk to me, obviously, you can tell.
they talk to a lot of people from what I've been around and experienced.
That's what I'm saying. Everybody has an experience. It's not unique. It's just that I was trained by masters, and so I have the ability to go deep inside them. But anybody can do it. And anybody, that's why everybody's attracted to these things, and it's why so many people are attracted, just crystal in general. I mean, just all the different types of crystals and stones that we have. It's not by accident that ancient peoples were so involved in mining these crystals and minerals and using them, not just for adornment and for bling-bling, as we do today.
Yeah, I'm curious, too, being sort of new to this, what is the process of reading such a thing? You're talking about, you know, crystallography and quartz and things like that. Is there a sort of a physical action that you interact with the skull, or can it be purely metaphysical? How do you tap into that data?
All of the above. I mean, you actually you can have a physical reaction. I mean, the skulls are such, again, the crystal is involved with vibration and energy and electricity, electromagnetism. So just by putting your hand on an ancient crystal skull, most people get tingling right up their arms and they feel it immediately. So you feel what's called a piezoelectric effect, which any piece of quartz crystal, if you squeeze it, it produces a minute electrical charge. So physical effects, yes, physical scene. Again, the act of what we call scrying is a physical event. You again, techniques that were taught by masters, but it has to do with by clearing your mind, doing deep breathing techniques. The crystals can be activated by many different ways, by light, by sound, and by color activates crystal. But deep breathing for the human, I will demonstrate this at the Resak Festival, how you can interact with an ancient crystal skull, or any crystal skull, or any piece of crystal. And again, it's just to clear your mind, and the physical act of scrying, again, there's two different things I'm going to talk about now, psychometry and scrying. Scrying, actually looking into a piece of quartz. Now, there's two different types of quartz. You have cloudy quartz and you have clear quartz. As Nick Nocerino would teach, if you want to scry crystal gaze in a clear piece of quartz, you have to cloud it with your mind, which means, again, you have to be trained in a way, and you have to be able to relax the mind, clear the mind. People who are meditators have no problem doing this. People who have been, you know, involved in different systems of study this way can easily do this. And you clear the mind, and actually you start to cloud the crystal, and you can see things physically in the crystal. This is not in the mind. You actually look into this is crystal grazing. This is what the old gypsies did with the crystal balls, et cetera, et cetera. And would see things and tell you things and see, you know, different events. These have actually been recorded on video and on film that the crystal does interact with the human mind. Different images and scenes can be seen in crystals. We have many, many different slides, many different images of people who've done this over the years. Now, the other aspect that you're talking about is psychometry. That is when I put on the other hat. I take off the scientist hat, and I put on the hat of the mystic. What you do then is you want to go into deep meditation with the crystal. Now, you no longer have to be physically looking at it, of course, but holding it, touching it, working at it with different ways, of course, you interact with the crystal, again, go into a deep meditative state and just allow the images to come, or even thoughts, even ideas, even sentences. Some people hear voices. Just let it happen. And that's the effect of what we call psychometry. I've actually worked in the Rosicrucian lab physically testing a couple of crystal skulls where people would go through these experiences. You then answer questionnaires. What did you see? Did you hear colors? Did you hear sounds? What kind of scenes did you see? We record these things. We tabulate them. This is, again, the science of metaphysics is very old, goes back to using psychometry, goes back to the 30s at Duke University. Professor J.B. Ryan is called the father of psychometry because he started that and teaching that. And again, you tabulate that. Anything less than more than 50% on a type of experience from different people who are not present at other people's sessions is called more than statistically not by accident. You know, we would have people have 80% would see jungles, how we would see Mayan different ideas that these skulls were involved with the Mayan cultures. People would start to see Mayan scenes, Mayan cities, would see elaborate headdresses, would see elaborate things, and we record this over and over. People were not in each other's presence. 80% of the people working with a certain skull would see Mayan scenes, so that skull became named the Mayan Crystal Skull because of that reason.
Wow. That's crazy. I know when when Mario was here, and Mario brought Pancho to my house, and I meditated with Pancho and touched my third eye to his third eye, my experience was a portal opened up. That's the only way I can explain it. I mean, that's how powerful it was. And it was an amazing experience. I mean, that's the only way I could say it to people is a portal opened up. But
now, I have to ask you a question. Sorry to jump in and put it on my hat. Did anyone tell you to put your third eye to Pancho, or you just intuitively did that?
No, I intuitively did that at the end
that's
of my meditation.
That's an ancient Mayan ceremony right there, what you did, you see, to connect the crystal skull third eye to third eye.
Yeah, and when I put them on my heart, I basically bursted into tears for about 10 minutes uncontrollably.
He was clearing out the chakras, dude.
Yeah, it was an amazing experience. So
that's great.
The WESAC is going to be a very powerful conference on top of Mount Shasta. And,
well, this skull, Einstein, like I said, just coming out, Einstein is a master skull. What we call about a master skull, many people have this idea of 13 skulls, 13 original skulls. I will be discussing that in my lecture. But what most of us who have seen, started getting with Nick Del Serino, first saw this vision in the 50s, would see an idea of 12 crystal skulls in a circle with a master skull in the center, 13. 13 is a sacred number to the Maya. 13 is Jesus plus the twin. Here we are, Easter weekend. Why not bring that in? The 13 number is actually a number of Jesus, not 12. 12 disciples plus Jesus makes 13. 13 is a number of Osiris. It's a number of resurrection in itself. So Jesus was playing out in ancient mythology. So 13 crystal skulls are very important. So Einstein is a master skull, the largest ancient skull yet unknown, 33 pounds. To understand the people who carve the work, you're looking at a mother stone to carve a 33 pound, there had to be maybe 80, 90, 100 pounds to carve down to a 33 pound crystal skull done by hand. Not by machining, not by tooling. We can prove that. That's part of the work I do, to establish that the ancient crystal skulls were carved by hand, not by machine. And they were carved by masters, and men and women. And the idea is that Einstein actually calls out other skulls. So I wouldn't be surprised if other people show up at the WESAC Festival with some other crystal skulls, or even ancient ones, or ones that people just get called to bring their crystal skulls, because Einstein is one of those that now that he's become public, and this is why, again, this is happening in 2012, and we do these conferences, he keeps calling in other crystal skulls to come up. Come out now and work with people. It's an amazing experience to be in, like it was in L.A., at the Sheraton Hotel, the Gateway Conference we had, total through the weekend, over 700 people, but there were 500 people that were maximum in the audience at one time. And at one, to have the packed, even more than 500 people, even people standing in the back, with hundreds, literally, maybe thousands if you count little ones, crystal skulls, including well over 13 ancient ones, and people meditating together, vibrating together, the energy was unbelievable.
Amazing.
It was so much that it attracted other conferences that were going on at the hotel at the time, came in to see what we were doing.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well, Stephen, thank you so much for coming on, and we hope to have you back soon. And we can get all that information on the WESAC website, correct, about ticketing and information?
Absolutely. And if you do that link that I sent to you, that people get a discount on tickets too.
Excellent. Great. Thank you. We'll post that up on EvolverPlanetRadio.com. And with that, Stephen, thank you so much for taking the time and coming on the show and being with us.
Thank you for inviting me, and again, let's come back and talk about Egypt, because I'm about to go off to Egypt next week, and the opportunity for me to do some very intensive research is now at a peak because of the revolution.
Wow.
Excellent. Can't wait to hear about that trip.
Great.
Great. Thank you. And with that, Evolver Planner, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Hope Griffin. We'll be right back.
Say what you will, or say what you want. She'll hang in the balance of a do or don't. The path that she takes could be make or break, right or wrong. she's staying strong. He stands at the corner with a phone in his hand. His heart is beating as he dials again, but he can't bring himself to his hand. He hesitates to tell the truth. Why does it have to be win or lose? And he's still not sure what he will choose. What should he do? Say what you will, or say what you want. He'll hang in the balance of a do or don't. The path that he takes could be made.
And welcome back to Evolver Planet Radio.
And with us on the line now is our musical guest, Hope Griffin, folk vocalist and songwriter. Hope, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks. Thanks for coming on. So tell us a little bit about your music. What's your style?
Well, I guess I'd be considered a folk acoustic or folk Americana. My stuff is really me with a guitar. That's how I started out, in my bedroom with a guitar. So that's kind of what I showcase now.
Okay. Do you play local shows?
I play around my town in Asheville and in Black Mountain. And I have an album coming out soon, hopefully in a couple months. But that's what I do play. Sometimes I'll play with a djembe player, but I frequent a lot of lounges and coffee shops and listening rooms, really.
So how did you get into music? How did you come to be a songwriter?
Well, I was born into a musical family, and I didn't actually start songwriting until I got to college, but I was a really big journaler. Even when I was 13, I started journaling and writing, and my mom was a writer, so I got some of my writing from her, and I always loved music, and then that kind of developed as I started. I studied music in college, and so when I kind of put those two things together and started writing music, and I've been doing it ever since. So I fell in love with it, and it's been my love. I've been stuffed since then, that day.
Oh, wow, interesting. So what inspires you? Where do you get your lyrics, or, you know, what sparks your creative process?
Well, a lot of my stuff is a lot of ballad writing. I do a lot of stories. I love stories. And so I think my inspiration, really, I just draw from real life, however I'm feeling at the time. A lot of it's been breakups, unfortunately. But that, you know, pain is good writing. But just a lot of stuff that is real to me and what's happened to me, and I try to make a story out of it. And that's where a lot of my stuff is drawn. That's what Hanging in the Balance is, a single that I'm releasing. It's a lot of stories and a lot of lyrics regarding people, which is life, real life.
So tell us. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Hope, what's the new EP about then, if you're writing stories, and what's it focused on?
Well, there's three ballads at least on my album coming out, and one of them is about my family, actually. There's a verse. I wrote a verse for each of my family members. There's six of us all together, but five verses in that song. And then I have one blues, but it's actually even a ballad. Then all of it really is, even though the styles are a little different. Most of them are based on stories. One of them I co-wrote, but a lot of it is just trying to just vary my sound quality. I mean, when I first started writing, I did this, you know, me in my bedroom, and it was kind of just trying to figure out what my style was. And then this EP will be really coming of age, so to speak, in a lot of my musical endeavors. And so this album is a lot of whereas stories are kind of my inspiration, that's what I've done. It's going to be six songs of different stories and different styles related to that.
Now, I know you play a lot around locally here, and you're in Black Mountain tonight, and I love Black Mountain because that's where I reside as well. And people have said that you have a beautiful, angelic-type voice, and I know you got a bachelor's degree in college in classical voice.
Yeah.
What exactly did that entail in getting a bachelor's degree in classical voice? Like, what?
It is not what you would think. I mean, a lot of people, when you think classical, you're like, oh gosh, Beethoven and Mozart and all that stuff. It's a lot of theory and a lot of, it's vocal training for sure. You're doing classical, composers, Brahms and Fauré and all those people. But it's really the what I pulled out of it the most is just, I always say that people that study actors that do movies studied Shakespeare, you know. It's like the same thing with voice. People who want to sing however they want study classical music, and that's what it did for me, is I'm able to manipulate my voice any way I want, and I can sing a lot of different styles, and so I think the best benefit for me studying classically was just the ability to do that, which was great for me, and I know the theory behind what I'm writing, so it's a little bit more, I guess, helps me in my writing and acoustically on guitar, because it makes it a little more advanced, I guess.
Gotcha! Wow. And now with your new EP, do you have any tours coming up and stuff outside the Asheville area? Are you going on tour anywhere else?
You know what? As soon as my EP releases, which I hope will be in a couple months, I will be going further out, Tennessee and South Carolina and hopefully Georgia. Right now I'm staying pretty local and then in surrounding areas of Asheville and places like that. But I hope to get further out. Everything's been pending on this EP release and getting the right musicians in there and getting it done. It's been a long process. I've started last August, and so it's been kind of just a creation. I've never heard my stuff full band before, and this EP is going to be a lot more, a bit broader sound other than just me and a guitar. So it's going to be really cool to have more sound to my music, and it really adds a lot of interesting things to my music and makes me hear my songs in a way that I never heard them before. So as soon as that happens, I'm like hitting the ground running, you know.
Nice.
So I'm excited about it.
There you go.
Oh, wow. Hope, so this is something I like to ask a lot of musicians and music lovers, and that is, if you could just play your dream concert and pick any, let's say, three artists, living or dead, to play with, I'm going to totally put you on the spot, who would they be?
My goodness. Okay, so this sounds super cheesy, but my inspiration comes from a lot of those singer-songwriters who nobody knows. So one of them is Dave Barnes. You guys may know him. He's actually getting a lot bigger nowadays. He used to play in this really podunk coffee shop where nobody knew his name, and now he's all over the radio. So Dave Barnes for sure. Ray LaMontagne is another one. He's amazing. I would love to play with him. Let's see. A third one? I don't know. I'd say maybe Tom Petty. He's a
Wow.
lyricist. Those are my three. Maybe all in one huge concert. I might be lucky. We'll see. They're all alive, so.
Great. And Hope, if you could say one thing to the listeners out there, a message for 2012, doesn't have to be about your music, what would you say?
I would say for us songwriters out there, we just appreciate you listening. Any and all types of support from you guys is amazing. It goes a long way. You spend a lot of time just being vulnerable in front of people and playing your heart out and stuff that you write. And it means a lot for people to sit and listen. So I'd say that would be my plug for us starving artists out here just trying to get our music out there.
Nice. Well said. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, and you can check out your music and tours and events at hopegriffinmusic.com.
Yes. Thank you,
awesome.
Guys.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Yeah,
all
thanks
right,
for taking
thanks,
the time.
Hope.
All right, and with that, just joining us next week, we're going to try to get Edward Twitchell Hall III. He was supposed to join us tonight, giving us an Occupy Wall Street update, but his phone got broken and taken by the cops, so he was unable to join us tonight. But we will have Ted back. He's been on the show before, and he's an awesome guest. He'll be updating us. And who else is coming on?
We'll have musical artist Michael Garfield, I think, coming on next, and he can tell us a little bit about the new Evolver social movement mix, which is really good. And nice. Also an interview with Berta Graff, a natural medicine and naturopathic medical doctor and nutritional counselor. Awesome.
Excellent.
You can also...
Oh, go ahead. I was just going to say you could check out graffwellness.com as her website.
Yeah. And you can also check out evolverplanetradio.com to find all the archives of this show and future guests. And as always, you can read evolver.net and realitysandwich.com.
And just for everyone out there who is not familiar with evolver.net and who we are, Evolver is a new social network for conscious collaboration. It provides a platform for individuals, communities, and organizations to discover and share the new tools, initiatives, and ideas that will empower our lives and change the world. That's why we're here. And with that, have a good weekend. We will see you all, talk to you all, be with you all next week. Good night.
Good night, Evolver Planet.